I will run and not tire until you bring me into the wine cellar, until your left hand is under my head and your right hand will embrace me happily, and you will kiss me with the happiest kiss of your mouth. So writes the 13th century Italian mystic St. Clare of Assisi. And she's writing about her love of God. In the 16th century, St. John of the Cross writes of his mystical encounter with Christ. Wind blew down from the tower, parting the locks of his hair. With his gentle hand, he wounded my neck, and all my senses were suspended. I lost myself, forgot myself. I lay my face against the beloved's face. Everything fell away, and I left myself behind, abandoning my cares among the lilies, forgotten. Christian theologians and mystics have long experienced God and Christ in the erotic. And today it is often LGBTQ plus theologians that continue to contribute to our understanding of God by bringing together the sexual, the sensual, and the sacred. The Rainbow Prayer, written by Patrick Chang and Kittredge Cherry, talks of the erotic Christ, one of Chang's seven models of the queer Christ. And the prayer says, "Orange is for sexuality, the fire of spirit. Erotic Christ, you are our fire, the word made flesh. Free us from exploitation and grant us the grace of mutual relationships. With the orange stripe in the rainbow, kindle a fire of passion in us." And this idea of the erotic Christ is no stranger to the Bible either. In a very sensual act from today's gospel reading, Mary anoints Jesus' feet with oil and dries them with her hair. Physical touch, sometimes erotic, sometimes not, plays a big part in the story of Jesus' life. If we think about it, I mean, it occurs so much and so often. Jesus is described, for instance, as reclining together with who we only know as the beloved disciple. And Jesus washes the disciples' feet, was betrayed by Judas with a kiss. Thomas satisfies his doubts by touching Jesus's wounds. And touch also played a part in the healings that Jesus was known for, either touching the ill person or being touched by them. God created us as physical beings, as beings who touch and hear and taste and smell. The sensual is an amazing and wonderful part of the human experience, a part of the human experience that God has gifted to us. It's part of how I believe that we are made in the image of the divine, and it has the power to reveal the divine. And if the body and our sensuality reveal at least some aspects of the holy to us, I think it's all the more fascinating to have as part of our Holy Scriptures the book, The Song of Songs, which we also call the Song of Solomon. This is a poem that combines the erotic and the sacred by engaging all of the senses in its description of two lovers struggling to be with each other. It's a love poem, perhaps not for the faint of heart. Rather, it's a song that pushes the envelope, challenges the status quo, and leaves us wondering if the holy could indeed be revealed in our bodies. The song treats our bodies and sexualities as gifts from God to be enjoyed to their fullest, and questions the human restrictions that we put on people's bodies, raising issues of class and race, especially the treatment of women. The song understands the spiritual and the erotic not to be at odds with each other, but very much interrelated. And of course, the song has not always been understood that way. It's perhaps the one book of the Bible that even literalists don't want to take literally because it disrupts or queers our cultural fear of the body. The tradition has often been to read the song allegorically, perhaps equating the woman with us, those who seek God, and the male lover with Jesus, making the poem about a yearning to be with Christ. Which is kind of interesting because it takes a heterosexual, highly erotic love poem and kind of makes it homoerotic. When you imagine all of the male priests and interpreters lusting after Jesus, the male lover in the poem. But the song is actually one of the books of the Bible that maybe we should understand literally as a love poem about human desire. And in fact, the song doesn't even mention God directly. But if we understand the body as a site of revelation about the holy, then surely God is there when bodies dance in the song. God is there in the descriptions of the body's beauty. And God is there in the sexual yearning, the desire to hold and kiss a lover. The song celebrates bodies, sexuality, and human love, and encourages us to do likewise. The song tells us that passion is not something that needs to be restrained, but should be lived as a wondrous gift from our Creator, meant to be enjoyed. Our sexuality and our physical bodies should bring us joy and be celebrated. We should treat our sexuality as an expression of God's good and holy creation. Our passion should never be something to be ashamed of. But this sacred erotic is also more than just physical pleasure. The author and the feminist Audre Lorde defined the erotic as deep relationship with and yearning for the other. An erotic power as the power that arises out of sharing deeply with another person. According to Patrick Chang, the erotic is to share our joy in the satisfying of the other rather than simply using other people as objects of satisfaction. And as the incarnation of God's love, Chang understands the erotic Christ, the Christ of deep, intimate, and joyful relationship, as the very embodiment of God's deepest desires for us, the desire to be in intimate relationship with us. And in that understanding, our idea of sin, or our idea of the things that estrange us from God, becomes exploitation. When we're selfish and lack concern for the needs and desires of others, when we see another person, whether sexually or otherwise, as merely an object and a means to an end, when we exercise power over others that compromises their ability to live fully, then we're destroying relationship. We're creating fear and resentment, and we move away from the deep connection that God desires for us. However, if we cultivate mutuality in our relationships, if we honor, respect, and support each other, if we give attention to the wants and needs of the other person, if we help them to live and experience life fully, then we're drawing together both with that person and with God and God's desires for us. Mutuality is the grace, the counter to exploitation. We can see something of the sin of exploitation and the grace of mutuality in our gospel reading. When Mary anoints Jesus' feet with oil, it is not only a sensual act, but it's done to honor Jesus. Mary does it to show her love and respect for Jesus, and Jesus in turn shows his respect and honors Mary when he comes to her defense after Judas criticizes her. And that, I think, for me, is an example of mutuality. Judas, on the other hand, at least according to what's written by the author of John, is all about exploitation. On the surface, he seems pious, voicing concern for the poor. But we're told by the narrator of the story that his real motivation is that he's angry because he's missing an opportunity to skim a little off the top. He doesn't want to help the poor. He wants to exploit them. And as a side note, I think looking at that incident in this way helps make what Jesus says next a little more sense. When he says, you'll always have poor people, but you won't always have me. I wonder if Jesus isn't being callous about the plight of poor people, but instead he's really just telling Judas to shut up because he'll always have someone to exploit. But what is happening in that moment is not the moment for exploitation. It's important. It's important to Mary. It's important to Jesus. Now, exploitation is about control, about lack of consent. It's one person using another, exerting their power over them for their selfish benefit. And we see that clearly when we reflect upon the erotic. Exploitation is about not caring what a sexual partner wants, using them as an object of gratification without concern for their feelings or pleasure. But as Judas also shows us, it doesn't have to be about sex. We see exploitation today in all the ways racism manifests in our society. We see it in politicians and religious leaders trying to control women's bodies. We see it in the economic exploitation of workers by corporations that are only concerned about their quarterly profit. But the erotic Christ reminds us that what God desires for us is not power and wealth, but mutually supportive relationship, deep, intimate relationship. And the rainbow prayer asks God to kindle within us a fire of passion for others, to lead us into that mutual relationship, to help us respect and care for the well-being of our sexual partners, but also our friends, our neighbors, and even, yes, our enemies. It asks God to help us fan the flames of that spark of spirit, that spark of compassion that already resides within each of us. Now, I'm no relation expert, as those who know me know that, no. But I happen to think relationships are hard. Open, honest, vulnerable communication is not easy for a lot of people. We let fear get in our way, or at least I often do. Fear of rejection, fear of looking foolish. Our brains make up lots of lies to keep us from taking what it thinks are risks. We'll tell ourselves that if we reveal too much, the other person isn't going to like us or is going to be ashamed of us. We'll tell ourselves that we're not good enough. But all of those fears and lies that our brain comes up with to try to keep us safe really only serve to keep us from the deep, intimate relationship that God desires for us. I think we can help nurture our compassion for others by taking a little bit of time to reflect on our relationships, asking ourselves, are they centered on ourselves? Do we always ask first, or maybe only ask, what we want, what our needs are? Do we always talk about ourselves and rush to be the center of attention? If we want to build our compassion, if we want to kindle within ourselves the fire of passion for others, that divine spark, then the erotic Christ reveals to us that deep, intimate relationships are built on mutuality, communication, consent, asking about and respecting the other person's desires, coming to mutual agreement. It's not about ignoring ourselves completely in favor of the other, but it's about mutuality. We need to care for the other and ourselves. We need to be honest, to talk about concerns and fears and risks in our relationships, making sure everyone knows what they're getting themselves into. We need to respect the other person. We need to own our feelings and communicate our feelings without projecting them or blaming them on someone else or making assumptions about the other person's feelings. And it occurs to me that we might even be able to learn a lot about these issues from more non-traditional relationships. For example, Chang notes that in the BDSM world, there is an emphasis on consent, communication, and risk awareness in order to avoid exploitation and ensure mutuality. BDSM relationships are often all about exploring the dynamics of power, which is what really what we're talking about when we talk about exploitation and mutuality. Who has the power? We might also think about open and polyamorous relationships in which open and honest communication and ownership of one's feelings are all key to making those relationships work successfully. And Chang points out that mutuality doesn't dictate any particular type of relationship, but applies to all of our relationships, whether it's sexual or not, whether it's monogamous or not. What God desires for us is deep connection with each other, deep connection with the sacred. And that connection can come in many forms in all of our various relationships. And so we pray, erotic Christ, you are our fire, the word made flesh. Free us from exploitation and grant us the grace of mutual relationships. With the orange stripe and the rainbow, kindle a fire of passion in us. May God grace us with the revelation of the erotic Christ, with compassion, with mutuality, with the knowledge that we are all connected deeply to each other and to creation. In the fire of our passion, may we reach out and draw closer to God and to each other in love, helping and supporting each other, coming together in true community. Amen.